It's been a while, but we had a bunch of forest fires here, and we were in the middle of a show, and we get the evacuation call. Well, I mean, it's not wasn't quite as big as it is now, but I mean, there were still, I don't know, there had to have been 100 head on the place, and you got some cattle, and you got dogs, and you got cats, and you got, you know, you're moving a whole ranch. And so I jump in the rig, and I head from, the show was in Castle Rock, fortunately, which is only about 25 minutes away. I come home, I grab a set of horses, I run them back into the fairgrounds, and by the time I had gotten back, so let's just say 45 minutes, the place was cleared out. All the horses were gone. Two loads of hay were gone. The cattle were taken over to another pasture. Just, Jolene said, as soon as I left, it was just like there was a line of trailers just coming in the driveway. And she just was standing there, taking names, taking places where the horses were going, keeping it all organized, and boom, it was gone.
You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to The Ride, a podcast brought to you by Horse and Rider Magazine, hosted by Nicole Cherico. In each episode, we chat with some of the industry's top trainers, clinicians, horsekeeping experts, and professionals to share inspiring stories, training philosophies, and the importance of living your best Western horse life. In this week's episode, I sit down with Devin Warren of Warren Performance Horses. Devin is a reigning professional who's built a program that touches nearly every corner of the performance horse world. From the breeding operation he and his wife have developed together to producing open-level horses and supporting a thriving non-pro community, everything they do is rooted in family and a true love for the sport. Whether it's helping a client chase big goals in the show pen or welcoming someone just starting their journey, Devin's approach blends high-level horsemanship with a supportive, down-to-earth environment that makes people feel at home. We talk about how it all got started, the importance of balancing performance with longevity, and what it takes to run a family-focused program at the top levels of competition. This week's episode is brought to you by Purina. You know what it's like when folks get real loud over a horse in the heat of competition, cheering like it's overtime, because it's not just a horse, it's your obsession. And when your horse is your teammate, you'll do anything you can to make sure you both perform at your best. Purina, we've spent decades meticulously designing nutrition to help make sure your horse is at its best. Get the performance-proven, research-backed supplements your winner needs at purinamills.com/horseperformance. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Ride. This is your host, Nicole Cherico, speaking. I am here today with Devin Warren of Warren Performance Horses here in Colorado. Devin has been a very big part of the industry in so many different ways, whether it's competing in the open division, working with non-pro riders. He has this insane breeding program that has just flourished over the years. So thank you so much, Devin, for sitting down to talk with me. You are a busy man.
Thank you. We always just try to be learning and having fun. So these things are awesome.
I love that. Yeah, no, and our listeners are always appreciative of anybody who will come and sit down and talk with us so that they can just learn more about the people that they've just looked up to in this industry. But for those who might not be familiar with the reining industry, can you talk a little bit about your background in the horse industry? Did you grow up in the horses? You know, what was your journey to the reining pen?
No, I mean, I was one of those crazy kids that, I mean, we lived out in the middle of kind of the mountains on stuff. And so we had no TV, no anything, you know, obviously internet wasn't done for all the young kids and don't know how to get away without their cell phones. So, I mean, you were just riding horses. My mom had a small breeding operation, kind of showed like back in the Buckskin Association, that, but we never had the kind of the high dollar national quality stuff. So kind of grew up doing the 4-H, and I'm just kind of the personality that whatever I do, I tend to push. So there was a trainer by the name of Troy Hikes who had Jack's Electric Spark, been in the reining. At the time he was here, but he was about an hour and a half from us in order to get any lessons or, you know, that part of it or get better where I could be more competitive in that. At the time, the 4-H was a very, very competitive deal where only, you know, three seniors, three juniors, you had to qualify to go to state fair. It wasn't just, you know, where everybody got to go kind of mentality as it was now. You had to take written tests every horse show. You know, it was a whole different system than what we have now when people think of the 4-H deal. But so trying to get an edge up on anybody, you know, it was an hour and a half down the mountain and to his place. And so after some lessons and stuff like that, I started working for him when I turned 16 and I could have my driver's license. And so I'd work for him for 5 days a week at the ranch that he was at, Pine Run Ranch, down in Black Forest, and then worked my sixth day at the lumber mill up in Woodland Park, so I had enough gas money to get back there because I was only getting $40 a week from him. And it just kind of, I worked all there all the way through high school, and then worked there 2 years after I tried a year of college and just decided the ranch management program was teaching me how to be a farmer. And I was just not where I wanted to go, and so I started working for him full-time. At the time, I worked at the ranch for 2 years solid, and then he left and moved to Oklahoma City. The ranch there asked me to take over as head trainer. And then during that time, I had met Jolene, my wife, and we had gotten married, and I worked as head trainer there for 2 years, and then we went out on our own and moved up to the facility that we've had here. Lordy, what have we been here? 24 years now. Leased it for 7-8 years, and then we're able to buy it.
Was there ever like an aha moment on like, this is what I'm supposed to do with my life, I'm going to be a reining trainer, or like, was there like any kind of thing that stands out, or did you just always know that you wanted to be involved with the horses?
I mean, I just always got along with the horses, kind of, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I loved like designing things. And so I tried commercial, you know, taking classes in college as far as commercial art, some architectural stuff. Honestly, I looked at the military, you know, special forces, you know, just something always pushing that part of it. But the horses always drew me back because it's a new challenge every day. It's a new, you know, it's just not the, I love a creative process. Whether it's, you know, working on a wood lathe or, you know, some of those other things, you know, of just seeing something come along and that part of it, whether even if it's people learning and riding and seeing them grow and seeing them follow their goals from the first few times somebody comes out. And, you know, there's a lot of times I talk so much psychology and so much that it can go over somebody's head. But I just love that, the part of it. So once they kind of get the idea, you know, a lot of times from one of my assistants or something, of the foundation of the program, we can just dive into the psychology of things and watch people grow and watch things create. And I mean, it's just watching people on that journey. And, you know, before I understood the whole people part of it, watching the horses just get better. And I don't know, there's just something oddly satisfying with that.
I think that's fantastic though, because, you know, it's not always so easy for a horse trainer to be able to, you know, when I'm doing this podcast, a lot of people will be like, I don't know, I'm really great with the horses, but I can't explain to people what I'm doing, or I'm really good at explaining to people, you know, coaching. And so it's really special that you're able to have such a diverse program where you are training those open level horses, but you also have a huge non-pro program as well. I was at your barn on Friday, and the amount of people who were there in the middle of the day riding, you have a busy arena.
Yeah, it's a horse show every day.
I love it.
You know, and I mean, I'd have to remember what year it was, because I started out in the paint horses, you know, when Troy worked at that ranch, at Pine Run Ranch, they had, you know, Chickaverse and who had been the super horse in the paint horse deal. And so that part of it, you know, and the industry was a little different than it is now. It's so specialized now. I mean, it was starting to get a little bit more specialized back then, but when you go out on your own, you have to figure out how to pay the bills, how to eat, how to, if you don't. And I mean, there just wasn't. So I learned to ride Western riders at a very high level. And, you know, my love was always the reiners, but you know, pleasure horses and helping gals in showmanship and horsemanship. And, you know, we went through that whole stage, you know, keeping your little stash of reiners in there, you know. And, but there's an article, it's something Jolene and I had always did. It was always going to be about the people. We feel like God, you know, when we were able to buy this place and that part of it, there was always a part of the program that was about helping the people. You know, especially the youth kids. There's so many lessons that can be taught with learning how to win and how to lose and how to communicate with something that thinks completely 100 different, you know, 100 different ways than you do. You know, we go away from pressure as a human. They go into pressure. And if you can learn to communicate with a horse and be a horseman, what a great leader you can be. What a great, you know, human that you can be. And the better I've gotten with the horses, the better human it's made me. And it would be a shame not to share that knowledge.
I love that. You know, and I was a youth kid. I came from a training barn like that. And I also learned a lot about just, you know, being held accountable and taking care of an animal and all of that stuff. So I love that you're trying to be accessible for youth riders who are trying to get involved.
Yeah. I mean, we've just kind of always tried to give back a little bit, you know, as times have changed, you know, where you spend your time. And, you know, so many parents try to use it as a babysitting tool. Well, the kid really doesn't want to, but, you know, be there. So you're not going to be able to have that same touch into their life. But the ones that just crave it, love it. I mean, we will get so creative to be able to get those kids, you know, time, and whether they come out and they trade out with me or they, you know, however they have to do it to get them out and be able to help them with that passion, we do it.
I love that. Kind of going on to war and performance horses, you've told us a little bit about how it got started. You are now a reining focused barn, but you cover a lot of different aspects of the reining industry. We've already kind of touched on some of those. Can you talk a little bit about your program and how it has changed over the years? I mean, obviously non-pros working with youth kids, that's still a very big priority for you guys, but you have so many different things going on.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely, you know, grown and changed and done some of that. But the fun part is, as the program has grown and gotten bigger, the core foundation has stayed the same. So having it be about the people, and there's so many of the people that are still here from where there was the all-around days, or they've changed disciplines, and now we only do, obviously, the reiners. And we're breeding for the reiners, which all started, you know, because you couldn't depend on, at the time, you know, we're up here in Colorado, the non-pro and that part has always been the kind of the core of the industry up here. And so having horses that I could ride and, you know, generating horses for me in the open program, you know, we started with a $500 mare by the name of Fajita Benita. And now, you know, all the way through, we're, you know, I think, you know, Jolene told me we have 65 signed contracts for next year. And we have 30-some foals coming this year. And so many of them out of, you know, level four finalists or $50,000 in earnings and, you know, all of the great prodigy. But it's just, it's so fun because, I mean, people walk in the barn. I mean, there's customers. I mean, I'd say 80, 85% of my customers have been with me over 15 to 18 years. And so they've all grown and, you know, adapted and gotten into the breeding, and then they, you know, and it's just a whole big family part of it, really.
It's a testament to your program as well to have clients stay for that long. That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty cool. I mean it's, you know, with having them there, and everybody kind of helps the program in their own little different ways. You know, you obviously have doctors, you have lawyers, you have, you know, pharmacists, you have people that are just, they love to garden. So they come out and they do the flower beds, and, you know, everybody has their niche. Like we were away on vacation, 2-3 years ago, and one of my assistants fell on him and broke his foot. And I didn't have a, you know, ambulance come out and get him. I had, you know, that. And I got a call and they're like, I can't believe you did that. That guy's worked for you forever. You know, you didn't even take care of him. And, you know, you didn't have an ambulance come out. And I'm like, okay, let me give you a timeline here. I said, you don't understand how my program works. I said, everybody knows something. I said, okay, so he fell down. I said, within 10 minutes of him falling down, there was an anesthesiologist looking him over, whose husband is an orthopedic surgeon. She was in the arena with him. I said, within 20 minutes of that happening, he was in at my chiropractor's getting an x-ray. Within 10 minutes of that x-ray being taken, he was the x-rays were looked at by 3 specialists and 2 general surgeons. 45 minutes after that, he was back home in a cast with his prescription being prescribed to him at home by dosage by my pharmacist. Tell me where I didn't take care of him. I said, he would have still been sitting in the emergency room.
He'd probably still be in the waiting room.
Yeah. I'm like, that's how we take care of it, you know? Another one needed his shoulder scoped. Well, one of my orthopedic surgeons got his whole, you know, staff to donate their time. It cost him $1,500.
Oh my gosh. You've built a community. It's not just a training barn. It's not where someone goes to take their weekly lesson. You have built a community.
Yep. Pretty much.
I love that.
And so, you know, anytime anybody needs something, you know, and so they've all just grown. I mean, it's so fun, you know, because we have several different programs within it, you know, whether you got the Ratcliffs with theirs, and, you know, and they've, you know, Gernacascia that Storybrooke Farms owns, and the one that Trevor Dare was really good at the Congress on this year. Why am I blanking? The Bay Baldface. Oh, crud. He was reserve at the Congress on it. That came out of their breeding program. You know, those are all mares that we rode here and helped them with their breeding program. And, you know, they moved, you know, twice just to be closer to us. They had moved from Wyoming then to Woodland Park, and then they were still too far away, that, you know, because they're about an hour and a half, and they moved again to be 10 minutes behind us, so that part of that community. And another customer, you know, moved up from Durango to be 10 minutes from us so she could have her breeding program enrolling. And, you know, Diana Kenyon and, you know, Grace Wins. And so then that part of it, you know, Garth Heisted, you know, all of his breeding operation is here now. And, you know, so he had Mega Mag and Big Gulch X, who's produced 280-some thousand now. All of those kind of moved to be part of this community when we got going with stuff. And, you know, it's pretty cool to see that part of it come together. And it's been a huge blessing from God, just opening doors and moving things around and moving parts around and just seeing how it all, you know, comes into play. And then, you know, like with, you know, Customize My Dream, I never thought I'd have a stud, but then here all these owners are with all these great mares that we've built over the last, you know, 20 years, and they're jumping on board, you know. And, you know, I think we'll have 17 of them. They have 17 signed contracts just in the barn with him.
That's incredible. Okay, so with such a large program, such a big community, obviously there's some big challenges that come with such a large operation that operates in so many different parts of the reining industry. I know you and I have spoken. You said your wife Jolene was traveling thousands of miles each week just to get the broodmares going. And I mean, it is literally everybody has a job to keep the wheels on the bus.
Yep. Yeah, it's, I mean, that part of it, you know, obviously, you know, the organization and that part of it, without Jolene, I'd be sunk. I mean, that part of it, you know, is where she is just really, really strong with that part of it. And, you know, the biggest thing that helps with those challenges is that we do have this community, is that, you know, something comes up, you know, trucks break down or somebody gets stuck, or we can just make some phone calls and everybody comes running. And, you know, the horse community is a little bit like that anyways, but I think we've been blessed to be able to take it to another level. And so that, you know, if, you know, whether it's, you know, something's always happening, something's always breaking, something's always that part of it. But when you know you have those people behind your back, you know, whether you need a doctor or a vet or, you know, whatever, a mechanic, somebody's always there to help you. And I think that's the biggest thing that helps us overcome the daily challenges on everything that we do here. And, you know, it's so cool to watch people come in and, you know, kind of find their niche in the program, and they just see a need and they start filling it. And it just helps it run so much smoother.
That's fantastic. The community is such a cool aspect to it. I've seen a lot of different barns. I've been to a lot of different barns, and to have that kind of community is pretty special and pretty unique.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, the horse deal is, you know, pretty big community there. But I mean, I don't remember. It was 10 years ago. It's been a while. But we had a bunch of forest fires here. And we were in the middle of a show. And we get the evacuation call. Well, I mean, wasn't quite as big as it is now. But I mean, there were still, I don't know, there had to have been 100 head on the place, and you got some cattle and you got dogs and you got cats and you got, you know, you're moving a whole ranch. And so I jump in the rig and I head from, the show was in Castle Rock, fortunately, which is only about 25 minutes away. I come home, I grab a set of horses, I run them back into the fairgrounds. And by the time I had gotten back, so let's just say 45 minutes, the place was cleared out. All the horses were gone. Two loads of hay were gone. The cattle were taken over to another pasture. Just, Jolene said, as soon as I left, it was just like there was a line of trailers just coming in the driveway. And she just was standing there taking names, taking places where the horses were going, keeping it all organized, and boom, it was gone.
Wow. I'm from the Midwest. I'm from the Chicago area. And when I moved to Colorado, wildfires were a very new experience for me. And I wrote about this in one of my ed letters because I remember evacuating a bunch of horses in Longmont. I was riding cow horses at the time up in Longmont. And I remember watching horse trailers drive straight into the fire. And I was like, this is incredible to see, because everybody else is fleeing and there's traffic going the opposite direction. People are parked on the side of the road gawking. And then you just see these horse trailers going directly into the line of fire to go get those animals.
Yeah. It's that part of it, but to have that, you know, sense of community, you know, around, but then to try to take it to another level, you know, at the barn, it makes it pretty cool. I mean, every Friday, every Saturday, I mean, usually at least one time during the week, you know, whether a customer's coming out for a late lesson or whatever, she just brings pizza for the staff. And, you know, one guy always brings breakfast burritos for everybody on Saturday mornings. And, you know, it's just, it's the normal thing here. And I don't think I've ever seen anywhere that it's kind of the same, you know, as far as on that level of it. And, you know, there's times that it, you know, you can go, oh, I just want some space. But in reality, it just, all those challenges are running everything. And, you know, hey, yes. Oh, you can't get this one, you know, to the breeding barn this week. Okay, well, I'll just run it up there, you know. Because, I mean, Jolene was, I mean, 1,000 miles a week. You know, every flush that we did, she spent about 6 hours in the truck. Because it was an hour to the south to have the mare. You know, they just, the vets are here pretty much every day during breeding season. And between breeding, you know, we have two vets, you know, between the breeding and the soundness and all of that. And, but the one to go get the mares inseminated is 45 minutes to the south. Well, so they have to run them down there so they can make sure they're ultrasounding them, if, you know, every couple hours if we're doing it frozen semen or, you know, cooled semen or whichever it is. And then, so you got to go, you've got an hour down and, you know, probably an hour back if you're not bringing something back. Then you got to go down and pick them up 48 hours later, take them back up. And then you got a two-hour drive to the north for the flush. So then you got another 4 or 5 hours on the road there. And, you know, you figure there's 30-some surrogates sitting out in the pen this year. And you average two flushes per surrogate on average, you know. And, I mean, that's a lot of miles and a lot of driving and a lot of coordinating. But
yes, that's, thank goodness for your wife, because, oh, yeah. My gosh, that is a full-time job all in itself.
Yeah, and then we also have a great Leah Rohrer that's in my office, and she is, everybody laughs because they call her my second wife, because she comes out and tells me, nope, that's not on the list. You're not doing that, because I'll see plenty of squirrels. You know, I'm a little bit that way. I'm like, oh, something shiny, cool. And, you know, she's always keeping me on task. And so she's another big asset. And they have a big cattle breeding part of it. And so they, you know, she's used to that part of it. And so she's very good at, Devin, you're getting off task. Pull your head out. And I'm like, oh, you know, great, Leah. You know.
Thank goodness for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So between the two of them, they pretty much keep me on the straight and narrow. I mean, most days, if I step out of the arena, something happened, you know, a horse acted up or they needed help with a surrogate. I'm like, you know, the emergency, you know, when they pull the alarm, I got to come running. But other than that, pretty much they keep me in the arena going on horses all day long. And, you know.
And there's plenty for you to stay busy with just staying in that arena all day.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually take a couple of snacks and some, you know, water and that, and then they'll bring me as, you know, something for lunch. And, but I don't usually, once I'm step in that arena, usually 7:30, 8 o'clock, I don't step back out until 6, 7 o'clock at night.
Well, I witnessed this firsthand on Friday. And you had so many non-pros of so many levels, just in and out doing lessons. You're riding 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds and everything in between. And, but can you talk a little bit about what you're hoping riders to take away when they have a chance to ride with you? I had a blast with some of your non-pros that were there. They are so funny.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the great thing. I mean, they've just all, they feel that same sense of community. And so they're very welcoming. They're very, because the biggest goal I want, in reality, I really want them to be better humans. But if they're learning and they're having fun, the success will come. And so if we can, you know, do something, whether like Fridays and Saturdays are half social, half learning, depending on whether you're a visual learner, audio learner. You know, sometimes it's just, you see somebody else struggling with the same problem that you had, and you get to hear myself or one of the assistants talk them through it, the light bulbs turn on. And so part of it is that my non-pros see as many squirrels as I do, and trying to get any of them to show up on time and keep a schedule throughout the day. You know, your lesson's at 1 o'clock. Well, you might be done in 30 minutes if your horse is great, but if your horse is being a kind of a pill and we need to stop and let it air up and do this stuff and then work through some stuff, we might be there for an hour, hour and a half. You might start a lesson with me or Madison, or start one with Madison or Jose, and I step in because you're having trouble and we work through some things. And so the schedule is like non-existent as far as that part of it. But there's also that part of that is the fun that you get to have seeing somebody else be successful or have that part of it. And then you're like, okay, I'm getting it. But I just really want them to be better horsemen, better people, and enjoy the process. You know, we try to stay to the schedule as much as possible, but I'm not going to be so strict that they miss that experience and miss that opportunity to learn a little bit, you know, stay around after their lessons, watch somebody else, and try to learn and take away as much as you can.
I could have sat on a horse in that arena all day because there was one thing going on in one part, somebody else working on something totally different. You were riding one of the young ones. I mean, it was really cool to be able to just sit and like soak it all in.
Yeah. I mean, it's my poor guys. I mean, you know, once they get those 2-year-olds out of the round pen, I'm like, I can't promise one of the non-pros isn't going to come down to a rundown or said, everybody needs to have their eyes up because, you know, they're trying to work on this. And those poor 2-year-olds, they get broke pretty quick to the traffic and people running up and down. And it's just, especially on, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I mean, it just, that, and everybody seems to come out at the same time, you know, see their horses. I just run a very open program, you know. There's some guys that are very, very structured. You got to call to see your horse. You got to call to see that. Well, yeah, if you want a lesson, that's fine. Let's call and schedule it. But I'm not going to keep you from coming and seeing your horse and interacting with it and being part of it. So I've always had a very much an open door policy.
Horses are too expensive to not enjoy them.
Yeah, tell me about it. That is for sure.
It's why we do it, right?
Yeah.
We love it.
Yeah, there's days Jillian and I go, oh, we're so tired. But then you go out to the baby's pen or something like that, and it's just a rejuvenation of everything.
So we've talked a little bit about the breeding program, but we haven't actually talked much about your mare Gonna Be Custom, who is almost at the $1 million dam mark, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it's getting pretty daggum close.
You started with a $500 broodmare, and now you have worked your way up to one of, maybe a handful of mares who have reached that $1 million status. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, she was the number 5 mare this year for production. I mean, she's at 753,000. And I think we've had 6 or 7 in the pen.
Oh my gosh.
So,
how did you, come to get her? Did you have her in your training program? Like what's her story a little bit?
Well, I mean, that's just, it's not a short story. That's for sure.
Oh,
so, I mean, we originally bought her from Tim McQuay, and I mean, we paid a lot of money for her as a yearling. I didn't. Garth Heisted did. And he was the one that also had big hold checks that, you know, when we started a lot of the breeding stuff, I would try to go out. And as things evolved, when we went from that $500 mare up through, and I had leased a Gonna Trash, not a Gonna Trash, it was a, oh, anyway, it was another customer's mare. And we just kind of grew. And Garth had come in and seen it. And, you know, one of his first ones that really hit was Mega Mag, which Casey Hinton won the Level 3 at the Futurity. And, I mean, Nancy Moxley owns it now. And, I mean, it's still going strong as a 10, 11-year-old. And so he got, you know, that was one of the first ones we had put that hit the national scene from the breeding. But Garth had bought this one as a yearling, and then she fractured her hock as a two-year-old and never got to show. And Garth, you know, just being part of that community, went through a very ugly divorce. And he's like, I can't pay you for this. Will you take this mare's trade for my bill? And I'm just like, oh, that was such a hard hit, you know, for us, you know, financially, you know, just to wipe that bill clean. And it's just, she's blessed us tenfold over. I mean, you take a mare that, I mean, yeah, she's really, really well bred. I mean, the whole bottom side of that mare is, you know, just so big, you know, and, you know, her, all of her siblings have done well and, you know, that, but, you know, you're taking, you're wiping this debt clean, you know, but it's what, you know, we did. He was always part of the, you know, part of the community, and he's going through a horrible time, and we try to take care of it. We're just fortunate enough that God blessed us with her and taking a chance, you know, that was one of Jolene's feels. Because, I mean, at the time, he said we could have the mare that produced Mega Mag, and so she had already produced well over 100,000. And Jolene's like, I don't know, I just have a feel on the, you know, on the mare going to be custom. And she's like, I think that's the one. And I'm like, I never got to show her. I never got, she doesn't have a record. She has one foal on her side, and we're going to do that. She's like, yeah, I think that's the one. I'm like, okay, let's go for it. And, you know, the first, and I mean, we got the one that we sold to Casey Hinton, you know, the bald face one that he showed and run for the million twice. I mean, it failed its first vet check. And, you know, the people found some stupid little thing that, you know, I don't remember what it was. It was an odd shape in the stifle, or I don't even remember what it was now. But, it, I mean, the vet was like, well, that's just really going to hurt resale. And we're like, Garth, I like him enough, I'll buy him. And, you know, I rode him until the youth world, his three-year-old year, when Casey Hinton bought him from me. And then that was the first one. And he made the finals that year at the Futurity, and then came back and won the level three at the Derby. And, you know, that one's now won like 189,000. So that was, you know, one of the first ones that I sold out of her. And then obviously the one that I gave to Casey, I mean, he took him over Tulsa of his three-year-old year. So he had it 60, 90 days before the Futurity, and the reserve at him. He's won 236,000 so far. And then the next year we did it again. I did the same recipe with that one. And that one ended up seventh, and now he's won, both of them qualified for the Run for the Million the next year as a four-year-old. I mean, that one's won 279,000 so far. And so, and then the next year we came back, Casey took over the mare he wanted a little earlier, so he took it at NRBC. She made the level four finals and then kind of banged a leg. And so that, but still, I mean, she still won 37,000 as a three-year-old. So she was the highest placing mare at the Futurity this year. So it's, that's been pretty cool. There was, you know, most of hers have pretty much hit. There was a little Joe Cash that just never got shown, didn't get a chance, just got hurt. And then there was another one that banged a tendon as a three-year-old. It was a in like Flynn. But he's starting to come back, and we got him back in the program, and I think he won 6,000 last year. So, I mean, she's just been a great mare.
I'm a true believer, and sometimes things happen for a reason. It sounds like there was a reason that this mare ended up in y'all's hands.
Yeah. I mean, it's been awesome. I mean, Garth, you know, has been able to rebuild his program, and, you know, he gets to still enjoy that part of it. And then his mares, I mean, he still has that big gold checks who, you know, produced, you know, 230 some thousand now. And he has another, you know, mare that, you know, is HF Call Me Rhonda, that is, you know, level four finalist. And, you know, he's putting all of those back behind William. And, you know, they're going to make you love me. They're going to trash a mare of his that's won 43,000. And so it's funny how the Lord kind of plans these things. And, you know, Garth building all these mares and us building these mares. And it's funny when you look at them that how before we even, you know, because the stud game was never one that I had done it for customers and that kind of stuff with some other horses and that part of it, but I'd always focused on the mares. And then all of a sudden this mare of ours produces a great stud, and now between all the customers and myself, we have the mares to back him. And not only just mares, but really good mares that have great show records already. And like I said, I think we have 17 contracts just in the barn, you know, to him. And that's, it's funny how that all just starts with one little mare with a fractured hock.
That's wild.
You know, and that part of it has just been an incredible, incredible blessing, and just trying to use what we have that God has given us to the best of its ability.
Absolutely. Customize My Dream. We've talked a little bit about him. So you said that he was at Casey's for 60, 90 days before the fraternity.
Yep.
So how did that all come into play? You know, it's obviously it works, because since then you've had Casey ride some of the full siblings to this one.
Correct. You know, I was down at Tulsa, you know, I was going to show him down there, and he, you know, I was just talking with Casey and stuff, and, you know, asking him about, you know, some training questions, and, you know, I'd kind of bounce stuff off of Casey before, because our programs and our psychology are pretty similar, how we ride, just with the guiding, with the, you know, just very minimalistic as far as what we do, as far as our training styles. And so he's like, well, what are you doing right now? I'm like, well, I got about 2 hours for a paid warm-up. And, you know, he goes, well, who's the paid warm-up on? And I told him, you know, it was on William. And he's like, well, I don't have anything going on right now. Let's go get him and we'll warm him up and I'll help you out on him. Great. So we go get him, and he watches me for a minute, and, you know, I do my transitions, I do the turn. He goes, mind if I hop on him for a second? And he goes, I think I can feel some things, but I just want, before I tell you, I just want to, you know, feel it. And sure, he gets on, starts tweaking a couple of things, and asks him to turn around, and that sucker hits another gear. And I'm like, he goes, ah, you just were, just needed to move it over an inch or two. Oh, well, that looked pretty daggum good. He goes, it felt really good. Huh. He goes, you mind if I circle him? Nope. Go for it. So he goes and circles him, nails his first two transitions. He goes, mind if I stop him? Nope. Go for it. Goes down, hits his first three stops, bigger than Dallas. He comes over and I said, that horse looks like you need to show him. And he's like, it's kind of funny because I was thinking the same thing. And, you know, he ended up getting cut at that show. So I had to have some stitches and I couldn't show him at that show. And so he went, you know, I'm just like, well, you know, the stitches will come out in a week, you know, on his hip. And I'm like, just go and take him home. And, you know, if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. And I'll meet you at the fraternity and I'll show him. He calls me back and he's like, this horse just feels like you made him for me. He goes, he feels like he's been in my program the entire time. And so we went back and forth, and You know, I'm sending him videos of me showing him at the summer slide, and he's asking questions on, you know, how I did certain things as far as my lead change program and trying to simplify that. And so he takes him down to the Southwest, and he goes, well, let me just lope him through a novice horse class and see. And I think he cruised him around to a 74. I mean,
cruised him.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, he's like, holy cow. And I think, I don't remember what he was, at 27 and 28 in the futurity there, won the futurity there. And then, you know, that part of it, you know, and then even at the futurity, the horse, you know, he doesn't need a lot of riding, and he almost does better when he's really fresh. So, you know, we pull in on what, Monday, you know, and Casey and I showed it the first day on, I think, Wednesday. So we figured out we'd each have two, maybe three rides if we needed them before he showed him, you know, because I had one the same day, the first day. And so he goes and shows, does really well. He's like, you know, he goes, I have a gut feel. I just need to send him home. Okay. So he sends him home. So the horse goes from the first go, he goes and sits at home and just goes out on the walker, out in the, you know, in the paddock. And sits at home, brings him back up the day before the second go. Rides him one, two rides, and then second go, and then he just didn't have time to take him home. He goes, I'd really love to take him home from the finals, but I just don't have, he goes, it's not, you know, conducive to spend the 5 hours on the road, you know, each way, you know, before the finals. So I think, I don't remember, I mean, it was less than a dozen rides that horse had between being shown and everything all week. And, you know,
that's incredible.
He spent over half the time gone from the show.
This is a 3-year-old, for those who might not be familiar with the word futurity. Like, this is a 3-year-old that hasn't shown more than, would you say, one other time before this?
He showed Summer Slide and Southwest.
So two, twice.
Yep.
Now, I'm sure you were taking him to horse shows before you took him and showed him, but like, still, to have a horse that's still so young in its career to be able to do something like that, but also that it says a lot about you and Casey and listening to what your horse needs and not what you guys might need and just doing what he needed to be ready. And I love that.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, both Casey and I really try to listen to the horses. And I mean, Casey was awesome as far as listening to me on what I did with the horse, where I did with the horse. And it's really been an awesome thing as far as our two programs learning to work together and, you know, doing it now multiple times on, I mean, everything from, you know, what Casey was doing farrier wise, little some stuff vet wise, bringing that into some of my program. You know, Casey, you know, really liked what I'd done on some of the lead change stuff, and he's adapting, you know, some of his lead change program there. And then us constantly talking back and forth, hey, you know, we got this supplement that we found, you know, like when William came home and rested, okay, this has been really good for his digestion. This has really helped with the ulcers. This has really helped anywhere in the programs, our two programs talking back and forth, has been really, really great, and trying to elevate all of us as a whole. And that whole sense of, I don't know if you want to call it community or that, between, you know, trainers that are competitive. I mean, we're very competitive and everybody wants to win, you know. But then, you know, he's always been really great. If I send him a video, you know, what do you think on this one? And then, you know, now that he has also bought the 3-year-old as a yearling, now that it'll be, you know, one that he has that's gone through his program. And he's like, okay, what did you do at this time if they were doing this, you know? And, you know, that horse has brought so much more community, more change, more opportunities, more that I never thought. And then God just keeps opening the doors and moving things around. And he's just and then clients here jumped on board, jumped on with their great mares, and, you know, buying mares now as yearlings and two-year-olds going, oh, this one, you know, when we get this one shown in the next 2 years, this is going to be a great cross back on William. And you're just like, holy cow, this is snowballing. And just seeing everybody jump on board, I never thought in my wildest dreams I would have that. And then, you know, the two-year-old this year, I almost hate to talk about him because, I mean, he's just, he's a freak.
Oh, is this the one you were riding when I was there?
The big buckskin?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
He is a freak.
That thing has 15 rides.
That's I was riding with, for those listening, I was riding with Devin's assistant, Madison, and I literally like stopped what I was doing just to like watch you ride him because I was just like, what is that?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. Yesterday, I just started teaching him how to kind of step her over. And it was, so I've done that. You know, I'm so big on the shoulder moving and moving the front feet that they guide, you know, and I get that guide. But then, you know, when you actually kind of ask them to cross over a step or two. And so it was the third day that, you know, you're the first couple of days, it's like two steps at most, you know. And then yesterday, the third time I asked him, I was just kind of there one-handed and I was talking to somebody. I said, you just need to think front end around the back end. And I just went with my hand and I'm just riding in a little cotton, you know, hackamore. And he just started one-handed, head went down to his knees and he just stepped over three times. And I'm just like, holy Dinah. I looked up at Jolene. I'm like, did you just see that?
Oh, what a cool feeling to be on something so athletic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just that I just, you know, you sit there and you're like, Jolene's like, that could be your once in a lifetime horse.
That's awesome.
I already thought I had my once in a lifetime horse with William. And, you know, it's just that mare is just, I mean, it's just incredible.
That's now, do you find that all of you have several that are full siblings to Customize My Dream? Obviously that cross works. Why fix something that isn't broken? But do you find that they all ride pretty similarly when it comes to like their mind and just like how they like to go around, or are they all kind of different?
I mean, they have little tweaks and little different personalities, you know, but they just all want to please. None of them.
A winning cross.
Yeah. I mean, just none of them have wanted to be there. Like, Jolene brought in one of the now yearlings, and we call it a Colorado bath, but it's a, we just, you know, one of the blowers from the cattle industry, you know, when they come in and, you know, you got all those yearlings out here. And I mean, the Texas guys and the Oklahoma guys, they mean, you know, they get that little bit of hair, you know, but
yes. Yeah. We have woolly mammoths.
Exactly. Well, yes. You know, you give a yearling a bath when you're trying to take pictures or somebody's interested in it or whatever. I mean, you're 2.5-3 hours of sitting and letting it, you know, dry. And it's just, it's horrible. And so on the young ones, you know, and, you know, they've never been in a stall. They've never been in. And so she brings in one of the yearlings that we needed pictures of, hits it with a blower, and it just stands there and just gets its hair blown everywhere, you know. Most yearlings kind of go, holy cow, what are you doing? This thing's just like, hey, I'm in the barn, I'm cool, you know, I'm here to get my pictures taken, you know. And it's just like, she just stood there and let us do everything. And you're like, you just want to be a show horse.
And that's cool.
You know, that's the way the sister was last year. Jolene, when the first time I took her on a trip, because I don't have stalls for all of my young stuff. They still live in group pens until they're almost three for the most part. And so I wanted to take her to Tulsa for the ride and slide. Well, I think it was 13 degrees and snowing and 3 o'clock in the morning. And she hadn't been on a trailer since she was weaned, you know, with the vet stuff going up and down the road. I threw her in my trailer, took her down to Tulsa, threw her in a stall, and Jolene's like, are you trying to kill her? And she just jumped right in the trailer, went down there, acted like a show horse. Everybody teased me because I'm riding my woolly mammoth around the show. I'm like, it's fine. You guys won't be teasing me come November.
Right, right. Talk to me in November and we'll see who has the last laugh.
Yeah.
That's incredible. There's nothing cooler than just like having a horse that just, they just want to do it. And it's,
And that's, cool feeling. So, I mean, and that's the way they've all been. I mean, they each have their little quirks or, you know, some are a little stouter, some are a little bigger, some are a little smaller, but they all want to play the game.
So kind of going off of that, obviously you're probably still going to be doing that cross in the future, but what else does the future look like for Warren Performance Horses? You guys just continue to, like you said, it just kind of continues to snowball and like new doors just continue to open. It's so cool.
Yeah. That part of it is awesome. Just the mare power that's coming in and just Garth buying more horses and stuff that we have bought, you know, like there's a Walla Walla Wiz 3-year-old that is out of Blonde with an Attitude, you know, that, you know, Blonde Attitude won 46 or 64,000 and Little Miss Attitude won 111,000. You go down and she's produced 812,000. I mean, that's one that we had bought a couple of years ago, but it's a perfect cross on William. And when you go back and you look at what we was bought and created and that part of it to, you know, breed to him, like there's another one that we, that Garth had bought. Oh man, we bought the one from Mandy. It had like 18,000 on it when we bought it, but it was My Darling's Not Painted. And so we have a Spook's Got a Whiz out of her. That's won almost 50,000 now, still has a Derby year left. You know, her mother won 50,000. Her first one, you know, is that one. You know, Darling's Not Painted has produced 800 and some thousand. And all of these ones, I mean, these mares have been in the pipeline for, most of them were bought as yearlings. So they've now in the pipeline 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And when you look back and you're like, holy cow, God, you have been working to set this up from the beginning.
Yeah.
And they all just cross so incredibly well, you know, with William. And, you know, Spence Bell just had one that was a Mile Starlight. Daughter, but it's a Spook's Got a Whiz out of Mile Starlight. That last year, I mean, when we bred it, and he's like, I really like the stud. I like that. You know, can you work me a deal? So I'm like, yeah, I'll, you know, it had like 3,500 in earnings on it. Well, that mare now has over 26,000 in earnings in 1 year.
Wow.
And the non-pro. And wow. The baby is just incredibly gorgeous. And he's like, yep, I want more of these. I would love to be able to tell you I know where God's taking it and what I'm hoping in my plans and my dreams, but he's already surpassed so much of what we thought. I have no clue what God's going to do in the future.
Absolutely.
Because you sit back and you get a little time. It's so easy to get so wrapped up in the day-to-day stuff of, you know, I mean, we have probably about 200 head on the place. And the day-to-day operations and the running and, oh, you know, so-and-so got a nick and so-and-so, you know, has a snotty nose and, oh, my goodness, this one needs to be here and that one. And it's so hard to sit back and go, holy crud, God. You see the plan and you see it all come together and you're like, who gets to be the next one to come in? You know, no different than, you know, when Doug Mulholland got hurt last year and, you know, Brooke calls me up. She goes, you know, Dad's hurt. You know, he has this one horse that's, you know, really nice. You know, he's kind of green. He's kind of, you know, there. But I think Dad has a great, incredible foundation on him. Would you consider showing him? I said, well, you know, I'd kind of watched him at Summerside. I watched him in Idaho, you know. And so I run over to the Western Slope and put him through a little futurity over there. And there's just something about that feel of that horse. And, you know, I'm like, Doug, you know, I think I was 72, 72 and a half at this little futurity. And I had, I don't know, four or five rides on him before I showed him. And I'm thinking, I kind of know how Casey felt now. You start feeling this, and, you know, you just feel this horse there. And I'm like, Doug, it's just going to be a matter if he can run fast enough and get comfortable going at that high rate of speed. I said, he fits me. He gels with me. He understands. And Doug's like, yeah, he just needed somebody a little bit crazy like you that go all over the place.
That's cool. And, no, I watched your ride at the fraternity. It's a cool horse.
Yeah. And so it was almost reverse of what Casey and I had done, except Doug and I got to do it. And so Doug would come in the early mornings and watch me ride him. And, you know, through the fraternity, he just got better and better and better. And, you know, and Doug, you know, came to me. And I mean, it was before the finals night. And we had prayed over the horse and that. He goes, I think my second plan was always God's first plan. Mm-hmm. He goes, you were meant to ride him. And there's something about that, you know, if we can stay the heck out of the way, God can do some really cool stuff.
Yes.
It's just really hard for us to stay out of the way.
Yes.
Especially us, you know, squirrel seeing control freaks.
Yep. Yep. I can understand that very well. That's incredible. I have taken up way more of your time than I told you when I kind of tried to coax you into being on this podcast. So before I let you go, where can people find you? I know that you guys have social media. I know you have a website. Where can they learn a little bit more about William?
Yeah, you can just look up Customize My Dream on Facebook. He has a website, and just Warren Reining, Facebook. I don't understand it all, but I'm told that's where you can get the best way. Just you can reach me on my cell phone. You know, my cell phone's up on everything as far as the social media and that part of it. You know, send me a text. I try to not miss many texts, but just give me a call. You know, the best thing is just do that. And, you know, I pretty much try to answer most of my phone calls that come in through the day. And I'm a little old school that way, but just, you know, come out and enjoy it. Whether you're looking for something, you just want to sit and watch the arena, it doesn't matter. Like I said, it's all kind of about the people and, you know, what that community has brought to our lives is pretty incredible. And we just like to give back as much as we can.
Well, this has been probably one of my favorite podcasts. I have just loved learning so much about your program and you, and it's so refreshing to talk to someone who really just loves this industry and, you know, the things that have happened over these last whatever years it was as everything snowballs. It's just so cool to watch. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yep. Anytime. it's knowledge is meant to be shared. It's not meant to be hidden.
I love that. You know, coming from someone in the media world, but also coming from someone who relied on magazine articles and YouTube videos and everything in between to continue learning. So I'm so appreciative of that. Well, thank you again.
Anytime.
Once again, we'd like to thank Purina for sponsoring this episode of The Ride. Thank you guys for tuning into The Ride Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and please be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow Horse and Rider Magazine on social media and find us at horseandrider.com to see all the cool things that we're up to. And if you have any comments or questions, please be sure to hit us up at horseandrider@equinenetwork.com. We want to hear from you guys. And if you like what you're listening to, please be sure to leave us a review on iTunes.